If you have been bikepacking or backpacking and felt you just needed to lighten the load you're carrying, this podcast is for you.
Glenn Van Peske is very well known in the United States, where he's a leading member of the ultralight hiking and bikepacking community. In 2002, Liz and I were helped enormously by Glenn and his family when we hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. Glenn even walked a couple of days with us, I think to make sure that we were up to it.
This will actually be the first time we've spoken in more than 20 years, and you can watch this podcast in video on the Always Another Adventure YouTube channel. Glenn has just written a book, and the title encompasses his philosophy: Take Less, Do More. And that is about much more than pack weight. Take less can also mean taking less from life, subtracting rather than constantly seeking to acquire more stuff, more money. Significantly, the book is divided into lessons, not chapters. It's a manual for ultralight hiking and also for life as Glenn and Francie live it. It's available to pre-order now. There's a link in the show notes and in the video description. And we will get to the philosophy stuff, but let us start with how Glenn first set about cutting his pack weight. And that began with bikepacking.
The first thing I did for lightening the load, and this actually started back in 1976 when I rode my bicycle across the country, I took a look at all my gear and tried to figure out what I didn't need to take, what was the least amount of gear I needed to do the trip, and then what was the lightest stuff that I could do. So I, you know, sewed some of my own down stuff. I cut the handle of my toothbrush, things like that.
The classic toothbrush.
The classic toothbrush, yes. So, I mean, what I did to reduce my pack weight, I mean, first you have to know what everything weighs. Actually, I'm dealing with a hiker who's about to do her first JMT, and we connected on the internet somehow, I forget. And I asked her, okay, send me a gear list. And she sent me a Word document that didn't have any weights. I said, well, what does stuff weigh? And she says, well, I don't own a scale. It's like, okay, well, so I sent her a couple of scales. That's the first step is you need to know what it weighs before you can figure out if there are ways to reduce it. And then go from there. I mean, in recent terms, the biggest thing I did to reduce pack weight was sewing my own pack. So that instead of a pack that weighed 7.5 pounds empty, I had one that weighed, you know, like under a pound empty.
Mm. But when you go into a store, for example, you would, if you were buying that little puffer, the gilet that you're wearing, you would take with you some scales and put all the gilets on and work out which was the lightest, or presumably do it online now?
Online looking, but yeah, if I'm shopping in a store, I will have a scale with me for sure.
Because that's not an approach I think many people take. I still get looked at quite strangely. I was in Cotswold the other day doing exactly that with some kit just to see what was a light thing. but what runs in parallel with this, and you emphasize this in the book, it's not just going as light as you can go. You need knowledge to use it correctly in that situation. I mean, your homemade pack is a great example, isn't it? Because it by no means is it going to be as robust as the original ones, as robust as some of the more conventional packs were at the time.
Sure, and there are some cases where you can just select something that's lighter because it's made out of lighter materials. You know, if you take a bamboo spoon instead of a steel spoon, well, you've saved some weight, but it's still a spoon. You know how to use a spoon. But yes, if you move from like a big tent to a tarp, well, you need some additional skills. If you take a lighter bag, you need to treat it differently. If you have a custom sleeping bag, you may need, you know, that's not as warm as your other one, you may need some specialized knowledge to select a campsite that's warmer rather than colder.
Yeah, tell me about your sleeping bag. I was going to come on to this, but you're still using that one that you had in 2002.
I am still using that one, and I don't remember when I got it, but it was a long time ago. And I think it's to me anyway, my way of thinking, the perfect sleeping bag solution. It's a fully enclosed down bag with a hood, with an integrated down hood, but it has no down in the bottom of the bag. There's a 16-inch wide portion of the bottom that is just a single layer of nylon. So there's, you save the weight of the zipper. It's a fully enclosed, you have down all the way around your feet, so your feet stay warm. But you have, you know, any down that you carry on the bottom of your bag provides no insulation value because it's compressed by your body. So it's just extra weight, not a lot of extra weight, but some extra weight. So it makes sense to me to just have the down on the sides and the top. And I'm very excited. I found a place, actually a friend of mine told me about it recently, Cumulus, a Polish company that makes a bag, the Ariel 330, that as best I can tell is like exactly like my custom bags.
Right.
It's amazing.
Because some people went for the idea of just a quilt, don't they? And thinking that if they sleep underneath that, but it wasn't for you.
The quilt doesn't make sense to me because typically the quilts have straps to hold them to a sleeping pad, which, you know, if you've got a, you know, 2 meter long by 40 inches wide inflatable pad, maybe that works great, but I don't. I have, you know, like a quarter inch foam torso pad, so there's nothing really to attach it to. And straps tend to be somewhat heavy. And then you've got gaps for air, bugs, whatever to get in. And typically quilts don't have a hood. So you probably need to carry, if you have hair like you and I, you need to carry a pretty good, you know, down hood, you know, a hat that's probably too warm to hike in. So you're carrying extra weight. Really, it's part of your sleeping bag if you're honest about it. And the thing that quilt people that I typically hear is, well, it's great for the flexibility because if it's too warm, you can just wear it like a blanket. And I guess to me, like I can remember being too cold on trips. Being too warm is not a big problem that I experience a lot on backpacking trips. Mm. And maybe if it was, maybe I'd be a quilt guy, but it just hasn't
then you could
sense
always,
to me.
You could always just rotate your back, couldn't you? And then use the bit without down on the top if you were too hot and compress it.
Yeah. Well, and I have, you could. And I have actually on nights that are warmer than I anticipated, I've gotten in my bag just to my waist. And then gone to sleep. And then, you know, when I get a little cold, I pull it up to my armpits. And then, you know, the next step is it gets a little colder and I wake up and pull it over my shoulders and my arms are inside. And then later in the night, I put my head inside the hood. So you can adapt. You can adapt it.
Did I dream this? Or did you also eat some, was it macadamia nuts before you went to sleep? Because the fat kept you warmer or something?
Yeah, I always try and some kind of nut butter or shortbread cookies or nuts or pour oil into your dinner, you know, a little packet of olive oil or two or something like that. But yeah, that gets into the skill. You know, if you want to shave a couple ounces off your bag, you want to make sure you're properly hydrated for one, and two, have some oils or fats that take longer to burn so you don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning freezing.
And you're not one of these people to linger when you're walking, are you? It's that's not meant as a criticism, but it's not a sort of usually a small stop and smell the roses trip. You've got this, the as you put in your book, this idea of burning daylight.
I do like to move. I don't sit well. And that has some advantages because if you're a person who likes to sit around camp at night after dinner and likes leisurely mornings when you sit around and make some hot coffee or something, then typically you're going to need to bring like a warm puffy jacket that's probably too warm to hike in. And so you're carrying something that you only need for an hour at night and an hour in the morning. And that's pretty inefficient. So I prefer to, you know, get up, pack up and start walking, which generates heat, and then stop after a couple hours when it's warmed up a little, and then have breakfast if I'm going to have breakfast. And it breaks up the day. You take advantage of a rest stop. Just makes sense.
I have to say, you taught us well. You know, we learned a lot from you in just a few days before our PCT hike. We really did.
Well, you were already very experienced. So, you know, I was glad to be able to give you a little flavor of the trail and a few tips that you found useful.
You started making your homemade gear during that early sort of kit boom of the late 1990s, early 2000s. There's a whole bunch of you at the time, because when Henry was doing Tarp Tent, ULA, Six Moons, and a few others were starting around about the same time. And Golight at the time, of course. I'm still wearing one of their puffer jackets.
I noticed that. That's a classic.
Long gone, I'm afraid, aren't they? But I remember that I actually had one of your very innovative G4 packs, and I'm still not sure what happened to it. I think it got nicked. Could you explain to me how that GVP gear, which was kind of around at the time that we knew you and we walked, became Gossamer gear? Because you were going to shut down GVP gear, as I understand it. Could you just tell me the whole story there?
Sure. I was, at the time, I was working 60 plus hours a week doing the engineering and another 30 hours a week with GVP gear, you know, answering emails and ordering packs and sending them out. And I was making good money as a civil engineer and taking no money out of the gear business. I was just doing it to help people out. So it was pretty obvious to me that those kind of hours were not sustainable. And it was also obvious which had to go, you know, since I had a wife and kids and a mortgage and college education to save for. You know, if I'd been single, might've made a different choice. I don't know. But, so I decided, I'm going to have to close down the gear company, and it's been fun, but you just can't do both. And so about the same time, I was on the board of the Pacific Crest Trail Association, volunteering to try and get back to the trail that I love so much. And we're at a board meeting, and Henry Shires, actually of Tarp Tent, says, you know, what about John Mackey? We're talking about the need to get additional board members. And I said, who's that? And Henry says, was the co-founder of Whole Foods Market. And I said, oh, okay. I don't shop at Whole Foods Market, so I didn't know the name. And so anyway, John is quite the hiker. You know, he's done the Triple Crown, and I think he's closing in on his third time of doing the AT.
The Triple Crown, just for other people who don't know, is the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail, which are the three great long-distance trails in the U.S. Sorry, but just right. Chipping in there.
Yeah. No, and you know, we hiked the 700-kilometer Alpe Adria Trail in Europe with him. He's a very strong and devoted hiker. And so we made arrangements. I was going to be in Colorado anyway to speak at a Continental Divide Trail Alliance function or something with actually Coop Koopmanis, founder of Golight, and Brian Robinson.
Coop was the man who said to me, incidentally, the way to make a small fortune out of making outdoor gear is to start with a large fortune. And it kind of probably came true. Sorry, I interrupted, but since you mentioned Coop.
That is a great line, and he was very, very true, very exact on that one, and knows that from personal experience. We arranged, Liz Bergeron, who was then executive director of the PCTA, flew out to Boulder, and we arranged to meet John Mackey to pitch him on joining the board. So we had a very nice dinner, And Liz flew back and I did my event and flew back. And then a couple of weeks later, Liz calls me and says, hey, you know, you're the connection with John Mackey. So, you know, it's time to follow up, give him a call, close the deal, you know? So I called up John and he said that he didn't want to be on the board as a hugely successful businessman. He guards his time very jealously. But he said he'd make a donation, and he made a donation, which was at the time the largest single donation ever made to the PCTA. And I said, as we were hanging up, I said, oh, by the way, I'm going to close down the gear company. So if you want any gear, because after Henry had made that comment about John Mackey, I went back to my yellow lined pad of paper that had all my orders on it. And his name appeared a number of times on that order. So he was a customer. I just didn't recognize who he was. So I told him on the phone, hey, I'm going to close down the gear company. You know, I just can't do both. And, you know, so if you want anything, order it in the next couple of weeks. So John says, don't do anything till I call you back. So he calls me back and says, hey, I've got a proposal for you. I will pay you $100,000 for 75% of the company, and you keep 25%. I'll put more money in. I'll hire someone to run it. You can be as involved or uninvolved as you want. So he says, I think Gossamer Gear makes innovative products, and they need to be around for people. And he was willing to step in and make that happen. So,
and you're still involved with the company? Are you designing?
I still own 25%. I'm still designing. I design stuff. Typically, I design stuff that I want, and then, you know, I get it to where I want, and then we have a meeting of Gossamer Gear leadership and decide, okay, are there more than five people other than Glenn who think this is a good product? Well, like we just produced, I was doing a big bike packing trip. We were doing, it was a couple of years back, 900 miles on the Great Divide. And I knew it was going to be buggy, so I didn't want a tarp, but space was at a premium. And of course it wouldn't have trekking poles because I was on a bicycle. So I wanted a tent that would protect me from the bugs. So I came up with a DCF tent. My prototype that I took on the trip was 6 ounces. And that eventually became a product. The Whisper tent was, and when we had it made professionally, ended up at 10 ounces. And we did a limited run of 100 and just sold out of those. So.
Wow. And you're quite happy now that Gossamer Gear stuff can be used around the world. It's not just one of these things for when you get benign conditions in certain parts of North America up that West Coast.
Yes. I mean, there are still, you know, if you're mounting an expedition to Everest, yeah, you're not going to be taking our gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Going to Denali. Still, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. And there are still places. I mean, it's still kind of three season gear, basically. I mean, I have tarp camped in snow plenty of times, but, you know, for real winter conditions, no, you're going to want a different gear set.
When we met Glenn, he had a successful engineering job and a sideline making homemade kit. He tested tarps on his lawn. He and his friend Reed Miller drove us to the start of our trail, and I recorded audio during the 6 months we were hiking. Now, not long ago, I turned it into a limited episode podcast. It's a bit more like a radio program. And you can hear that by searching for Pacific Crest Trail Then and Now, or it's on the Always Another Adventure YouTube channel and the podcasts, or go to pctpodcast.com.
Could I ask you to explain how this idea, which is a brilliant simple line, take less, do more. Could you talk about how that extends now into your life? And could we maybe take the idea that take is the opposite of give? So you've got the idea of not so much taking less, or it's more giving more, if you see what I mean. Because that, just speaking personally, that's exactly what Liz and I experienced from you and Francie. So did that, which came first almost, the take less, do more? Was it that philosophical side of it, or was it the lightening your pack?
I would say it was in parallel. You know, in the backpacking sense, taking less in terms of having a lighter pack allows you to do more in terms of cover more distance, be more involved in nature, be more, you can enjoy the outing more because you're not suffering with a heavy, heavy pack weight. It also provides margin. So if I'm carrying less weight, if I'm in a group, say, and someone has an issue and everyone has light packs, it's super easy to distribute their weight among everyone else. And if someone needs to run ahead to get a ranger in a case of emergency, that's suddenly easy if everyone's packing light. I did a recent trip, and there's actually a picture in the book, in Buckskin Gulch with Francie, and her arthritis was acting up and her hips went out. And so since I was packing light, and since she's married to me for almost 42 years now, she was packing light, I just threw her pack on my back and my pack on my front. And I was probably still carrying less weight than most of the people we saw in the canyon. And so she could get by with carrying no weight. And in life, you know, if you live on less, then that creates that same margin. We early on created a separate checking account. We used to call it our peace fund. Now we call it our tithing fund. People call it their generosity fund or gratitude fund. And we took a set amount of all income and just diverted it into that fund. And, you know, once you get used to it, you don't notice it. And so it becomes, in our minds, that's money that is not ours anymore. It's not part of our budget. We're kind of stewards of it. And so it gives us margin to respond to needs that are, that come across our path. So we don't have to ask the question, do we have money to help? The only question we have to answer is, does this have our name on it? You know, is this something that we're to make a difference in? We started small. We started at 5% of our after-tax income, and now it's a significant portion of our before-tax income.
You said earlier, though, as well, about sending a couple of scales to a hiker who she didn't have any. It's also that sort of just casual generosity, the sort of thing that we experienced when you picked us up from the airport, you hosted us in the home, you took us down to the start at Campo, you and Reed, you walked with us for 2 days, and then you came and picked us up and took us back to the kickoff and all that sort of thing, which I get the impression, I think at the time I thought, wow, why is he being special to us? But I get the impression that this was something that you've done more than once.
Well, you and Liz are special.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not fishing, Glenn.
But that is, I would say, a pattern in our lives. Yes.
And you talked go ahead.
I got a funny story. Francie grumbles sometimes about me bringing, you know, unwashed hikers home. But the other day I get home and there's three PCT hikers here. And Francie goes, I know this one is on me. She says she was at the post office. She was at the post office mailing some packages, and she sees some obvious through hikers there trying to get big boxes in the door. And she says, what are you guys doing? You know, we're mailing our resupply. We're hiking the PCT. And so she comes out and they're still messing with the boxes. And she says, well, I forget how, I think she says, well, you know, my husband's Glenn Van Pesky. He started Gossamer Gear. And they go, really? They're like, no way. And she says, yeah, you want to come by the house? And the one gal was struggling with too heavy a pack and was taking a toll on her. And she says, yeah, Glenn would be happy to go through it and lighten it up. So yeah, we ended up with three hikers at the house, but it wasn't on me. It was fancy.
Of course, so you're at a key point now for the PCT being in Bend in Oregon, really, because that's a bit where I remember you kind of, everything just feels like, oh, I want to get Oregon done with, please. And I want to get into the Cascades.
Yeah.
And so many more hikers now as well. Gosh, that was a bit of a revelation when I started looking into that. But also I was intrigued by your notion of subtracting is usually better than adding. Well, that makes sense in terms of stuff on your back. How does it make sense in terms of life?
You know, we are wired to think that more is better. And probably, I think as humans in general, and probably as Americans, probably two times as much as anyone else. But study after study shows that more does not make people more satisfied with their life, does not make them happier. There's studies, and different studies have different numbers, but it's pretty common that people will say, you know, a 20% increase, if I had 20% more money, then I'd be happy. But, you know, if they get a 20% raise, then very shortly, it's like getting a new car, you know, after a while, well, it's not a new car anymore. And so the thrill is gone. And you think, well, if I had a bigger car or more money, then I'd be happier. And I was fascinated. I read just recently Infectious Generosity by Chris Anderson, the TED Talks guy. And he quoted a study that studied people who were generous, gave money away. And they actually ran some studies where they gave people money to give away. And then they, you know, asked the questions to assess their happiness. And they found that generosity actually creates a level of happiness associated with a doubling of income.
Wow.
And it doesn't decrease with time. Like income increases, decrease over time, you know, but the happiness from generosity maintains over time. To me, that was just amazing. And it's interesting to me, like in these studies, typically they give people a sum of money. Here's $10,000. You can keep some of it, give it away. You can do whatever you want with it. And most people give most of it away. And our method of setting aside a separate account actually kind of functions as kind of like found money or money that's outside of your budget, outside of your system. So I think it's a great tool for creating a happier life.
I have to say, you do practice what you preach, because I know that you don't take a salary from Gossamer Gear. You are not taking anything from the book. All the proceeds from that are going to the Pacific Crest Trail Foundation. Let me ask you this, though. Did you have to overcome your inner introvert that you write about to write this book? Because you've shared an awful lot of personal stuff in there. And I just wondered how easy that was for you to do.
Yeah, I didn't want to write the book. John Mackey actually kept bugging me probably over 10 years to write a book. I'm not sure it's the book he was envisioning, but, you know, he still wrote the foreword. That was what he said he did.
Because it's not a manual for ultralight hiking. It's not the hiker's handbook.
Exactly. There's one chapter of that.
In fact, they're not chapters, are they, Glenn? They're lessons. They're lessons. I thought was another cue thing. Sorry, go ahead.
So, it was hard. I tend not to, I'm willing to share, but I don't like being the center of attention. Mm.
But was it a struggle then putting all this down? I know some people, actually the best books tend to be people like that who feel as if, oh gosh, I've got a duty to my readers now to actually give some of myself.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to get all the information down. And then I had help, obviously, kind of weaving the stories into the lessons. And actually, a lot got cut out of it in editing by the
publisher.
Did
you enjoy that technical side of things? Because I suspect that, you know, that long form writing is doesn't come easily to everybody.
It was the whole process has been super interesting to me. Yes.
And I gather we can get it here in the UK. So that's excellent. It's going to be on Kindle and it'll be a hard copy as well. I'm not sure where we get the hard copy from, but I've seen it on Amazon as a pre-order. So it's going to be there. I know you want to spend... Sorry, go ahead.
And I'm also... There will be an audiobook. I just reviewed the audio files for it. So,
yeah. Oh, excellent. So I know that part of what you're doing, what you want to do in the Take Less, Give More is to make sure you spend time with the family as well. Just explain that to me, please. That finally, as a sort of a last parting thought as to why you want to be doing that. And also not just the family, I suppose, the community, because you're deeply involved with the community. And I love your Instagrams and the sourdough bread.
And this is speaking as an introvert. You realize that, you know, everything you want to do in life, you know, when I was in business, building a business and things like that, and almost all of the joy you get in life has people involved in it. And so trying to, I don't know, you get in life to where it's not about me anymore. You know, it's about others. And now I'm super excited when someone enters my life and crosses my path. And, you know, I think, gosh, do they have something that's a solution to my something I've been trying to solve? Or am I going to solve some problem they're having? You know, why did we meet? Why did our paths cross? And it's exciting to find out what it is.
It really was wonderful to reconnect with Glenn after so long. We have occasionally exchanged emails, but to see each other and chat was special, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Take Less, Do More is available to pre-order. There's an ebook and audiobook version as well as a physical book, and I do recommend it. Pre-sale orders really help a new author, so if you can, that would be good. All proceeds are going to the Pacific Crest Trail Association, and there are links in the show notes and video description. There is also a link to buy me a virtual coffee if you have enjoyed this. The price of a latte helps pay the server costs to keep the podcast series live. So, thank you for that. I'm Simon Willis. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you again next time. Goodbye.